Well, Jesus went back to his hometown and had an interesting experience, and it reminded me of an experience in my hometown when I was 12 years old. And for me, part of the center of my life experience at that season in my life was baseball. And I played Little League all through childhood, and I was 12 years old and was on a team that was in the playoffs playing, hopefully for the chance to eventually win the Tustin City Championship. This was a big deal, folks. I mean, I could actually make the local newspaper. We could get a really nice trophy, and we'd be taken out to a really great pizza place and all of that good stuff. And I was one of the two starting pitchers on the team that year. And my coach had saved me for the semifinal game because he knew that was going to be our toughest matchup, and I was a strong pitcher. And he wanted me to be fresh and ready for that game, and I was excited. And I felt confident, and I felt thankful that I got a chance to be in that situation and contribute to my team and hopefully our team's flourishing and success. And I got up onto the mound, and I stunk. I didn't make it through the second inning. I walked four batters, including walking in a run. And with one out in the second inning, after I had given up yet another walk, my coach, Mr. Myrene, made that dreaded walk from the dugout out towards the mound, and I was humiliated. I was ashamed. I felt like I let down my team. I let down my coach. I let down my parents. I let down all of the fans. I let down the city of Tustin. I let down the cosmos. I couldn't look up to watch my coach walking out towards me. I felt so much shame and humiliation until I felt fingers very gently reach for my chin and raise my face. And there was Coach Myrene, and I was expecting and ready with my penitential speech, asking for her forgiveness and offering, you know, penance. And he was smiling. He was even chuckling. And he said, "Wilbur," that was his nickname for me, after Wilbur Wood, the great junk ball pitcher from years past. He said, "Wilbur, you just aren't yourself out on this mound today. You just aren't yourself." Now, in modern advertising terms, he could have just handed me a Snickers and I could have taken a bite and all would have been well. But we didn't have those resources in that day and age back in 19... And he said, "You just aren't yourself on this mound." And then he said something I'll never forget. "Let's see if we can find the real you at first base." Because the other pitcher on the team and I, we platooned between first base and pitcher. And so my friend Rich came over, we switched gloves, and I was pointed in the direction of first base. I wasn't benched. I wasn't scolded. I wasn't shamed. Because he believed in me, even when I found it impossible to believe in myself. And he saw something in me that in that moment, racked down with shame and humiliation, I couldn't see in myself. He kept me in the game. Gave me a chance to contribute. The Israelites of ancient times were being reminded by their creator through the mouthpiece of the prophet Micah of their identity, their calling, and how they were not exactly living into and living out that calling, that identity. And their response, a community responding in singular form as one person, was a typical human response. "With what shall I come then before the one who's given me life? The one whom I'm disappointing. With what shall I come?" You know, it seems to be an innate part of human nature that once something like this happens in life, we think that God is expecting something from us. Whether that be gifts or accomplishments or achievements or penance. And in the case of this passage from Micah, the list of things being offered grows more and more extreme, eventually even child sacrifice. Talk about being racked by guilt and shame. And I'm reminded of Brené Brown's words, that guilt means I made a mistake. Shame means I am a mistake. These words are just oozing with this sense of shame. And the voice of the Creator responds, what is required? Not a thing. Just yourself. Your real self. Your true self. But often we still believe that we need to offer something in situations like this. And so we often read the divine response as something to do. And as I was growing up in my spiritual context in the church, what I remember learning is that doing justice from this verse usually means acting for what is right, because you know that you are right and others are wrong. And that loving kindness or mercy usually means accepting those who have done wrong or done you wrong, forgiving and forgetting to the best of your ability. And then walking humbly usually meant considering everyone else as greater and more valuable than yourself. And as I grew older, I realized that part of what I was growing up with was a real paradox, a conundrum. And I'm a pretty good conundrummer. How does all of this work together? How do I make sense of such a confusing dichotomy? Exuding superiority and being more right than others, and experiencing inferiority as being less valuable than everyone else. And then consider Jesus. In our New Testament reading this morning, his message of the Spirit of God being upon him, within him, radiating through him, and the good news coming first and foremost to those who are in more visible need, the poor, proclaiming justice with power and with loving kindness. And yet, according to my childhood definition, not exactly doing it with humbleness. I mean, this scripture is being fulfilled in me? No wonder his neighbors growing up wanted to throw him off of a cliff after this. How does this all work? And then I wonder if maybe my childhood understanding of humbleness needs to be re-envisioned, re-examined. And I wonder if, in the nature of Hebrew poetry, that a divine reversal is kind of at work here. Rather than reading this linearly, do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God, what if we reverse those? What if the starting point for this consideration is to examine what it means to walk humbly? Walking humbly. Not thinking less of yourself and more of others, but as C.S. Lewis said, thinking of yourself less often. Not living by comparison, but in contentment. Acknowledging and embracing your true self and the misconceptions you have about yourself. the ways you think too highly of yourself at times, but also the ways you think too lowly of yourself. Remembering that you're no better or worse than anyone else, and that each person is a child of God, no matter how much their words or actions may be reflective of the contrary. Not being emotionally paralyzed or puffed up, deflated or deluded, frozen in fear or floating in fantasy or folly. Not being buried in brokenness or boastful in blessedness. I wonder if walking humbly means to celebrate that you are uniquely you. No more or less valuable than anyone else. Which enables us to recognize and to celebrate that every other person is equally and uniquely themselves as well. Which then can open us up to our deeply innate and embedded sense of loving kindness, mercy, compassion towards others and towards ourselves that so easily gets buried by shame and brokenness. And this loving kindness can then empower us to do justice, to live in ways that embody and advocate for equality and the flourishing of all God's creations and all of God's creation. And that brings me back to first base. Coach Myrene saw something in me that in that moment I had forgotten and I couldn't see in myself. And by the move to first base, I was reacquainted with my real self. And I was able to contribute on the field, at the plate. I actually ended up making the game-tying hit. And we were able to win that game. And yes, win the Tustin City Championship. Yes! It's not a moment of great joy or pride for me, even now, all these years later. But I was able to contribute to the flourishing of my whole team. And that was the incredible joy, was being able to be a part of that flourishing. And I wonder if living justly at its core means living out of your truest, most real self. I mean, after all, if the encapsulation of God's deepest desire for creation is encapsulated in the word shalom, that Hebrew word that doesn't just mean this kind of peace, but it means the equality and flourishing of all of God's people and all of God's creation. If this is at the center of the heart of our Creator, then as Nicholas Wolterstorff from Yale University once said, justice is the ground floor of shalom. In my case, maybe it's the first base of shalom, or maybe it's actually home base. And if shalom is what we are created to experience, then what if our calling isn't merely to do justice, but maybe in our own individual and unique and communal ways to be justice? I mean, being yourself is not meant to be a static experience. Often we talk about finding your true self and being true to that self as if that self never grows or is never challenged or never changes or expands or deepens. And yet that is the journey, is it not? We are continually a work in process. We are creations who have the spark and the ability to create and to continue being created as we walk through life, as we experience those daunting challenges, as our eyes are opened to new ways of seeing things, new ways of connecting with others, new ways of being. So maybe this is just the next step on that journey for each of us individually and for us as a community. To recognize that your Creator sees things inside each of you that often you have a hard time seeing in yourselves. And that our Creator equally sees those seeds of possibility and reality in our community here. That so often it takes time for us to discover and rediscover, or discover in new ways. And I guess I wonder for myself and for each of us, what might be a growing edge for you, for me, for us, as we enter into this season of considering what it means to do justice, to love kindness and mercy, to walk humbly as children of God. How might we discover new things? How might we be challenged and stretched, maybe in some uncomfortable ways, to consider the world through someone else's eyes, or to consider needs that actually impact our way of life and our way of life impacting those needs? What might it look like for us to consider our journey of faith and how it connects to what we consume, or how we spend our time or manage our resources, or how we engage in our spiritual disciplines in light of what's going on in the world, or how we consider the needs of those who are deeply and truly disenfranchised, excluded, rejected, living in situations of oppression and injustice? The invitation is for all of us to hear that call and to find our space and our place and to abide in that space for a series of weeks and to imagine the possibilities and to welcome the challenges and to lean into the chance to grow and to evolve and to deepen and expand. How might we discover and rediscover that home base of who we are and whose we are and who we are as a faith community and who we are as a world community? What might it look like for you and me and us to be justice? Amen.